ambassador to the UN calls on the Security Council to reject Israel's deceptions and confront its adventurism in the region. Israel carries out fresh airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, targeting some parts of the town of Jabalia. Also ahead, Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it is prepared to respond if Israel strikes Lebanese territory again. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations has called on the Security Council to reject Israel's deceptions and confront its adventurism in the region. In a tweet, Majid Takhtarvanchi said the regime and its allies made an abortive attempt to present fake information on the Mercer Street tanker incident to convince the council to condemn the Islamic Republic. He was referring to last week's deadly attack on the Israeli-managed vessel off the coast of Oman. Israel has accused Tehran of being involved in the accident, threatening military action against the country. Iran, however, has warned that any such move will be met with a crushing response. The UN Security Council will discuss the matter on Monday. Political commentator Alexander Azadegan says Israel has resorted to deception to wage war against Iran.
What is really going on is the Israelis are implementing their old tactic of waging war through deception. Many people believe this was Mossad's logo, but it's not correct. Nevertheless, the Israelis are very keen on starting wars under false pretext, false flag operations in order to pursue their foreign policy. I mean, they haven't really provided any evidence. And in previous situations where we asked for evidence, journalists, investigative journalists, they said we can't disclose the evidence.
Israeli aircraft have carried out fresh attacks on the Gaza Strip, targeting areas in the town of Jabalia. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon. He gave us an update on the latest round of aggression by the Israeli regime.
Israeli fighter jets attacked a Hamas security post in the northern Gaza Strip, a town of Jabalia, minutes after midnight. Causing extensive damage to that security post and also to nearby homes. Meanwhile, Israeli fighter jets continue to fly at low altitude in the skies of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli regime claims that the air attacks were retaliation for incendiary balloons that were dispatched from the Gaza Strip earlier. Many here believe that Israel will continue such attacks against the Palestinians in Gaza because of the apathy of the international community and also because of the fact that Arab countries, especially in the Persian Gulf region, have normalized their ties with Israel, given the Israeli regime the green light to further violate the rights of Palestinians. And to understand that it's been almost 2 months since Israel ended its 11-day onslaught against the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming hundreds of Palestinians in this impoverished enclave and destroying thousands of residential units.
Palestinians, meanwhile, have held a funeral for a man who was killed by Israeli forces during anti-settlement protests near the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Palestinian health officials say the 38-year-old man, that is, was shot in the chest in the town of Beita. He was pronounced dead upon arrival at the hospital. According to the Palestinian Red Crescent, nearly 60 protesters were also injured in Beita on Friday. Tensions have been running high in the occupied territories for months now over Israel's settlement activities, as well as its planned eviction of Palestinian families from their ancestral homes. Many Palestinians have been killed and scores wounded in the regime's crackdown on West Bank demonstrations. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it is prepared to hit Israel again if the regime launches new attacks on Lebanon. Hezbollah's deputy chief, Sheikh Naim Qasim, issued the warning after Hezbollah fired dozens of rockets at open areas around Israeli-occupied Shab'a farms. Hezbollah says the rocket fire was in response to Israel's airstrikes. Lebanon's parliament speaker backed Hezbollah's move, saying Israel only understands the language of unity and resistance. Earlier, Lebanon's caretaker prime minister also called on the United Nations to pressure Israel to stop its aggression.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has fired dozens of rockets near positions of Israeli occupation forces in the Shabah farms. Hezbollah added that the latest round of rocket fire came in response to the Israeli air raids that hit South Lebanon on Thursday. In an interview with a local agency, Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that the resistance is much more capable than it was in 2006, yet downplayed the possibility of an all-out war.
In this phase, the resistance is in an extremely high state of readiness, and it cannot even be compared to the level of capability and alertness which was present in 2006, whether in the arms, preciseness, military planning, training, preparation, and capabilities. And Israel knows this, so if they launch a foolish aggression under any pretext, Hezbollah will be ready.
An Israeli military spokesman stressed that Israel does not wish to escalate to a full war, but is prepared for it. Experts believe Israel was trying to move escalation towards the inside of Lebanon, but the resistance took things back to square one.
The Israelis have been trying for a while to change the rules of engagement with Lebanon, but Hezbollah's resistance has proven today that the Israelis cannot change the status quo as long as there is a resistance which is ready to face the Israeli aggressions. This was not only retaliation to the latest round of Israeli shelling, it was also a warning and a response to all the violations committed by the Israelis, whether in the air, land, or sea.
Lebanese President Michel Aoun and Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Hassan Diab urged the United Nations interim forces in Lebanon to put pressure on Israel to stop its aggressions against Lebanon's sovereignty. Several statements from Palestinian resistance groups were issued in support of Hezbollah's retaliation, which many see as stressing the full legitimacy of resistance groups to face occupation forces. With no civilian areas targeted from both sides, the status quo seems to have remained unchanged. It's the first time the Israelis launched such an attack against Lebanon since the 2006 war, but it's also the first time since then that the Lebanese resistance retaliates with multiple rockets against an Israeli military occupation post. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Meanwhile, Palestinian factions in the Gaza Strip have welcomed Hezbollah's rocket attacks on Israel in response to Israeli airstrikes. They also stress on maintaining their unity in the face of the Israeli crimes in the region. Ruba Shabit has more from the besieged Gaza Strip.
Palestinian groups in the Gaza Strip hailed the Hezbollah's move to fire a barrage of rockets toward the Israeli regime in response to Thursday Israeli air raids on South Lebanon. Palestinians welcomed the move, describing it as a strong message to Israel.
The Lebanese rockets foiled Israeli plans and projects aimed at separating the resistance in the region. It proved that the resistance won't remain silent in the face of the Israeli crimes. The Lebanese response is a message that Israel cannot impose its policies in the region, and the resistance will keep defending its rights.
The Israeli military said its Iron Dome system intercepted 10 of 19 rockets on Friday, with six falling in open areas in a third day of tension across the borders. There have been no reports of casualties or serious damage. Palestinian groups expressed their support to all forms of resistance against Israel and announced their readiness to stand with the resistance movement in Lebanon in defending their rights.
We hail the response of the resistance in Lebanon against Israeli airstrikes. This Lebanese move emphasizes the importance of the resistance in defending its rights and foiling the Israeli policies. The Israeli regime is also still practicing all forms of violence against the Islamic and Arab nations, and the resistance is the only way to put an end to these crimes.
The resistance said it won't allow the Israeli regime to impose new policies in the region, and that Israel won't go unpunished for its crimes.
We really welcome the Lebanese move to respond to the Israeli airstrikes in South Lebanon and fire rockets at the occupied territories. We stress that we are all united in resistance to liberating Palestine and getting the Israeli occupation away from the region. We are supporting our brothers in Lebanon, and we are all ready to defend any Israeli aggression against Lebanon.
Palestinian factions here welcome the Lebanese response against the Israeli attacks, stressing on fully supporting the resistance in Lebanon against the Israeli aggression with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Democratic senators and families of the 9/11 victims call on U.S. President Joe Biden to declassify documents detailing Saudi Arabia's role in the terrorist attacks. The families say Biden has failed to fulfill its campaign promise to release the information on the 2001 attacks. They say 20 years after the attacks, there is simply no reason to keep this information secret. The group has threatened to publicly stand against the Biden administration's participation in the next month's memorial ceremonies unless the information is released. Meanwhile, chair of the Senate's Foreign Affairs Committee backed the push. Bob Menendez said the bereaved families have a right to know if the government is sitting on documents implicating Saudi Arabia or others in the attacks. 15 of the 19 9/11 attackers were Saudi nationals. Back in 2004, a commission found charities funded by the Saudi government likely supported the attacks. Afghan government forces backed by local armed troops have recently managed to retake control of some districts across the country. That comes as locals in Afghanistan have welcomed President Ashraf Ghani's call to establish a united national front against the Taliban. Amin Alami has more from Kabul.
Following a recent call by the Afghan president on the entire nation to establish a united national front against the Taliban, residents of many cities, including Kabul, have welcomed the call by different moves, such as taking to the streets to chant supportive slogans and joining local armed fronts across the country.
Rural people of Afghanistan widely welcome President Ghani's call for the establishment of a national front against the Taliban. We saw how rural people in Herat and other cities put their unity on show by chanting slogans in support of Afghan military forces. This shows that it is a real national uprising.
The entire nation knows that the Taliban have ruined the infrastructures. They are just after war and violence. So I strongly support Afghan national security and defense forces to stand against Taliban.
Afghan military forces say they are committed to strongly pound terrorists all over Afghanistan, mainly in southern Helmand province, thanks to strong support they are receiving from locals.
A report suggests that the shadow governor of Taliban for Helmand province and a number of top military commanders, plus hundreds of them, have so far been killed in attacks conducted by our forces. We will strongly pound anyone who stands against the nation, against the republic and the constitution. The Taliban must realize that we are committed to defend our land.
Referring to the recent war crimes committed by Taliban, locals here say, unlike the beliefs of U.S. Special Representative for Afghan Reconciliation Zalmay Khalilzad, who had said that Taliban has changed, the recent advances of Taliban proved that they are still following a dogmatic ideology. Some of the displaced Afghans accused Taliban militants of committing war crimes during their assaults on districts and provincial capitals over the recent month. They say the Taliban have killed civilians, used them as human shields, and destroyed their houses. The only way against the militants' violence, they say, is to resist. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Pakistan's fugitive former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is in hot water after Britain, contrary to its track record, decided to expel him. Sharif has been staying in Britain for nearly 2 years, despite court orders to return home to serve 10 years imprisonment on money laundering charges.
Britain is known to be the hub of terrorist and corrupt fugitive political leaders fled from Pakistan. This is London residence of Altaf Hussain, a leader of Karachi-based ethnic political party. Back home, Hussain was convicted on terrorism and murder charges. Nonetheless, UK never handed him back to Pakistan of being what many believe an intelligence asset of British secret services. This is Ishaq Dar, the former finance minister who fled from Pakistan in 2018 to avert prosecution on money laundering charges. And here comes the former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, who has been staying in these luxurious flats, which judges back in Pakistan found were purchased with the looted public money. However, pressure from Islamabad has now compelled Britain to change its long-held pro-fugitive policy after London decided to expel Nawaz Sharif. His request to further stay in the UK was rejected by the Britain. His Pakistani passport is already invalid after Islamabad refused to renew it.
The UK government has been under intense pressure, not only from Pakistan, but various other countries whose fugitive leaders have been living in UK for a long period of time. UK government was under great pressure and under great criticism. And that could be a reason that the UK government basically did not allow Nawaz Sharif to stay on or extend the visa of Nawaz Sharif to stay in UK.
Nawaz Sharif fled Pakistan after plundering public exchequer. He should now come back to Pakistan and must return the money he looted, and after this he can comfortably stay at his home in Pakistan.
Sharif was convicted and sentenced for 10 years on money laundering charges, but was released from jail in November 2019 only for medical treatment for a few weeks. However, since then, he has been residing in London despite repeated court orders to return home to face trial of corruption cases. The former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is fast running out of his legal and political options after Britain decided to expel him. One of the choices, analysts believe, is to seek shelter in an Arab country after exhausting his all legal options to delay his expulsion from the UK. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Roger Blanford, a Stanford professor of physics and Slack professor of particle physics and astrophysics, said 50 years ago, when astrophysicists started speculating about how the magnetic field might behave close to a black hole, they had no idea that one day we might have the techniques to observe this directly and see Einstein's general theory of relativity in action. We now present you an article written by Dave Makichuk. The piece is titled Black Hole Discovery Backs Einstein's Theory. The article has been published by the Asia Times. another scenario that was predicted by Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity has been confirmed more than a century after it was first posed. And it all began when Stanford University astrophysicist Dan Wilkins noticed an intriguing pattern as he watched X-rays being flung out into the universe by the supermassive black hole at the center of a galaxy 800 million light-years away. According to a report by Taylor Kubota of Stanford News, Wilkins observed a series of bright flares of X-rays, exciting but not unprecedented. These bright light flares are not unusual because although light can't escape a black hole, the enormous gravity around it can heat up material to millions of degrees. This can release radio waves and X-rays. Sometimes this superheated material is hurled out into space by rapid jets, including X-rays and gamma rays. But then, the telescopes recorded something unexpected and exciting. Additional flashes of X-rays that were smaller, later, and of different colors than the bright flares. According to theory, these luminous echoes were consistent with X-rays reflected from behind a black hole. But even a basic understanding of black holes tells us that that is a strange place for light to come from. Wilkins, who is a research scientist at the Kavli Institute for Particle Astrophysics and Cosmology at Stanford University and SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory, said, "Any light that goes into that black hole doesn't come out, so we shouldn't be able to see anything that's behind the black hole." However, it is another strange characteristic of the black hole that makes this observation possible, and that takes us back to the great physicist himself, who released his theory of general relativity way back in 1905. Albert Einstein predicted that light must bend and reflect due to the strong gravitational pull around a black hole. Wilkins explained, "The reason we can see that is because that black hole is warping space, bending light and twisting magnetic fields around itself." The serendipitous discovery, detailed in a paper published on 28th of July in Nature, is the first direct observation of light from behind a black hole, a scenario that was predicted by Albert Einstein's theory but never confirmed until now. Roger Blanford, a co-author of the paper and a Stanford professor of physics and SLAC professor of particle physics and astrophysics, said, 50 years ago, when astrophysicists started speculating about how the magnetic field might behave close to a black hole, they had no idea that one day we might have the techniques to observe this directly and see Einstein's general theory of relativity in action. Researchers weren't even looking to confirm Einstein's theory. They were originally attempting to uncover the mysteries of an odd feature of black holes known as the corona, the source of the bright X-ray light. Material falling into a supermassive black hole powers the brightest continuous sources of light in the universe, and, as it does so, forms a corona around the black hole. This light, which is X-ray light, can be analyzed to map and characterize a black hole. The leading theory for what a corona is starts with gas sliding into the black hole where it superheats to millions of degrees. At that temperature, electrons separate from the atoms, creating a magnetized plasma. Caught up in the powerful spin of the black hole, the magnetic field arcs so high above the black hole and twirls about itself so much that it eventually breaks altogether. A situation so reminiscent of what happens around our own sun that it borrowed the name corona. Dan Wilkins said, This magnetic field, getting tied up and then snapping close to the black hole, heats everything around it and produces these high-energy electrons that then go on to produce the X-rays. As Dan Wilkins took a closer look to investigate the origin of the flares, he saw a series of smaller flashes. The researchers determined that these are the same X-ray flares but reflected from the back of the disk, a first glimpse at the far side of a black hole. Dan Wilkins said, "I've been building theoretical predictions of how these echoes appear to us for a few years." He added, "I'd already seen them in the theory I've been developing, so once I saw them in the telescope observations, I could figure out the connection." The black hole is about 10 million times more massive than our sun, and it's located in the center of a nearby spiral galaxy called Aizwiki, 1,800 million light-years away from Earth. The observations were made using two space-based X-ray telescopes, NASA's New Star and the European Space Agency's XMM Newton. More observation will be needed to understand these black hole coronas and the European Space Agency's upcoming X-ray observatory called ATHENA, stands for Advanced Telescope for High Energy Astrophysics, will launch in 2031. Dan Wilkins said, "It's got a much bigger mirror than we've ever had on an X-ray telescope, and it's going to let us get higher resolution looks in much shorter observation times." He added, "So the picture we're starting to get from the data at the moment is going to become much clearer with these new observatories. From here, astronomers hope to use the various colors observed as the X-ray echoes travel around the black hole to create a three-dimensional map of the black hole surroundings. They also hope to learn how the corona produces such bright flares."
Food for thought.
Salam, dear friends, and here we present you a wonderful formula for salvation as bequeathed to us by the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. My intercession with God on the Day of Judgment for my Ummah will be for only those who loved my Ahlul Bayt.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Seven barometric pressure.
We come to you and O God, name that thou art our only King.
You're listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. One of the main and most beautiful acts of worship, even we can say the most important act of worship that we have in Islam, is the Salah, is the prayer, especially the five daily prayers. Now the Salah itself and the prayer is not just the physical actions which we do, that is the standing up or the genuflection, that is going to ruku or the prostration or the sujood, but rather it is more than that. It has a deeper meaning. It is something that should enable us to transcend this terrestrial world and take our place amongst those who are close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is what Salah is. And obviously in order to do that, it is important for us to gain knowledge of the certain secrets that are within, or rather are contained within, the specific acts that are contained within the act of prayer, the act of Salah. So inshallah, in this episode and hopefully in the next segment, we will be introducing one of those books that will enable us to get better acquainted with the prayer and with the act of praying. Inshallah, we hope to see you then. Please stay tuned.
All the earth is a place of prostration. Every field and meadow, mountain, park, city, farm, plantation. Every roadside, seaside, hillside, walkway, any place clean and green can be a place to pray. When I think of every path where I have ever trod, I laugh at all the crazy spots I stop to worship God. Remember that long car ride, driving all night so far. Under the summer moon, we pulled off to the side, reclining in the front seat of the car, waking to a Fajr bird sound, and washing in the coin car wash we found with the water blaster making wound do. You sprayed me and I sprayed you. We stood so drowsy in the dawn behind the car wash dripping on the lawn. All the earth is a place of prostration. Every field and meadow, mountain, park, city, farm, plantation. Every roadside, seaside, hillside, walkway, any place clean and green can be a place to pray. When I think of every path where I have ever trod, I laugh at all the crazy parts of the
world. Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters, to the show Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. In this episode, we are talking about the prayer, we're talking about Salah, and we mentioned that it is important for us to try and get a better acquaintance with the secrets, or rather the esoteric nature of the prayer. The book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners today is a book that is titled The Radiance of the Secrets of Prayer. This book was originally written in Persian, or rather it was a set of lectures that was given on television in Persian, changed into a book in Persian, and then translated into English. The author is a well-known orator, Sheikh Mohsin Qaraati, who is more known or better known for his tafsir or commentary on the Holy Quran that is known as Tafsir al-Nur. This book was then translated by Brother Mansur Limba and was published by the Ahlul Bayt Wal Assembly, that is located in the holy city of Qom in the Islamic Republic of Iran. So in this text, the Sheikh, that is Sheikh Mohsin Qaraati, attempts to explain in detail the meaning of worship and the acts and the parts of worship, or rather the acts of that act of worship. For example, intention, for example, the standing up, for example, the recitation, and so on and so forth. And therefore he tries and attempts to explain the different actions of the prayer in detail and tries to then show and outline its importance and to make us better understand these actions. He says in the beginning and in the introduction that yes, you know, there are other books and other more valuable books out there dealing with this. For example, this is from myself, the book of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, that hopefully we may get a chance in one of our future episodes to introduce to our dear listeners, called Adabus Salah, and so on and so forth. But the point of this book is that it is for a general audience, and it relies greatly on the verses of the Holy Quran to make the readership better acquainted with the Salah. This book contains 8 chapters, namely beginning with obviously the introduction and then going into worship or ibadah, prayer, Salah. Then the next chapter is titled Let's Welcome Prayer. So for example, the wudu and the other conditions of Salah. Then it goes into intention, the niyyah. Then it goes into a chapter that is titled Let's Engage in Prayer, which is a chapter that deals with the other acts of prayer, such as the qiyam or the standing, the takbir or, you know, the beginning of the prayer and so on and so forth. Then the two last chapters deals with the post-prayer devotional acts. For example, what is known as the ta'aqibat. For example, the dua, the tasbih of Bibi Zahra, or the rosary of Bibi Zahra, or Lady Fatima Zahra, salamullah alayha. And then he goes in to speak about the congregational prayer, the importance of it. And finally, he mentions other prayers such as Salatul Jum'ah, the prayer of Jum'ah, the prayer of Friday, Salatul Eid, the two Eid prayers, for example, and other recommended prayers that we are asked to perform or motivated to perform by the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wassalam. So inshallah, in our next segment, we will be reading a portion from this book for the benefit of our dear listeners. Please stay tuned.
There's no better feeling than when we pray on time, and we know the rest of our days will work out just fine. So we must work hard and wake up before sunrise, so we can leave our homes with the blessings of Allah. So we can leave our homes with the blessings of Allah. It feels good to leave our homes with the blessings of Allah.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. We were introducing to our dear listeners the book The Radiance of the Secrets of Prayer, written by Sheikh Mohsin Qaraati. And the section that we would like to read for our dear listeners is the section that the author titled Intention or Niyyah. This is an important part because it is the crux of Salah. It is the crux of the prayer. For everything depends obviously on the intention of the person performing that particular act. And therefore it was seen as necessary or beneficial for both myself and my dear listeners to read a section or read this section from the book. So the author writes, Intention, Niyyah. Since intention, Niyyah, is the criterion of value in every act, including worship, it is the first obligatory act in prayer. Considering its importance, a separate and lengthy chapter has been included for the examination of its dimensions, with the hope that by doing so, we would succeed in giving more value to all devotional acts. Intention niyyah as a criterion of value. The element that gives importance to a person's actions is his intention, motive or objective. So in the verses of the Quran, the phrase, in the way of Allah, fi sabilillah, is often used 70 times, and thus a warning for people to ensure that their actions and intentions be in the way of God, and not for the sake of other than God, or their own carnal desires. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to have pure intentions, and to purify our intentions when we come and stand in front of Him at His threshold. Inshallah, until our next episode, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was the program Bookshelf on RIB English Radio with Brother Yasser Ibrahim.
Thank you. Last year, a powerful explosion in Beirut turned life around for thousands of Lebanese. Now, a number of people have decided to build a monument in honor of the victims of a terrible accident. 27 individuals and organizations have pooled their efforts to build a giant 25-meter sculpture at a site of last August's explosion. The artwork is called Gesture and is made out of reclaimed metal debris. It looks like it's handing a flower to the city of Beirut. When completed, Gesture will also have a water and light installation. The project was conceived and designed by Nadim Karam, one of Lebanon's most celebrated artists. South Korean medical workers manning drive-through coronavirus testing centers have a new way to cool off and rest amid hot summer days, recovery buses. The medical workers are now able to enjoy their breaks at these buses, which are equipped with air conditioning, cold water, and snacks. The workers are allowed to take off their protective suits that trap heat and create an environment difficult to tolerate. Some of the buses also have shower booths and bunk beds to help the medical workers deal with their hard work. They say the buses are refreshing.
I almost feel like I'm stuck in a heat dome, like in a car with the air conditioner off in the middle of summer. It's so hot that it's even hard to breathe. But when I come here during the break time and rest in a much cooler and more pleasant environment like an igloo, I can recharge and work cheerfully in the afternoon.
These buses were first designed and used as resting places for Korean police officers and firefighters. Now, 22 of them are deployed to testing centers across the country. The government is considering deploying more recovery buses amid rising temperature and a new wave of coronavirus infections.
An aquarium in the French capital, Paris, is celebrating the birth of a baby black-tip shark. The female shark is 55 centimeters long and weighs 560 grams. She's currently quarantined in a small pond so she wouldn't come under attack by adult sharks. Officials at the aquarium say she'll be ready to swim amongst other sharks in 3 to 4 months. She was born last week at the aquarium, an event the caretakers say is very rare.
It's a rare event for us, which hadn't happened here for the past 5 years. The birth is quite rare in aquariums and in captivity in general. In fact, there are often embryos that won't survive, or they're sometimes stillborn. That's what makes it a rare event, which also occurs at night. We had the chance to observe it during the day, which allowed us to intervene very quickly, and we're able to recover the little one.
The International Union for the Conservation of Nature has designated black-tip sharks as a vulnerable species. It's particularly poached in some countries for their distinctive fins. The marvelous creatures have a torpedo-shaped body and often spin out of water while eating. They have specialized cells in their snouts that detect the electric current of nearby prey.
A Turkish farmer hails the miraculous survival of two baby goats from deadly wildfires. Sergen Bayat said seeing his livestock threatened by flames was the most difficult moment in his life. Bayat said although he lost 8 of his animals in the fire, he found new life after the survival of a newborn goat. He said the mother of the kid had been killed in a wildfire. Bayat called it a miracle. But there was also another baby goat.
We found another goat amidst a wildfire. She has a baby. There you go. Miracle number 2.
Bayat says although his farm was severely damaged, he's now over the moon at the survival of the baby goats. The massive forest fire in southern Turkey broke out on Wednesday, fueled by strong winds. Wildfires are common in southern Turkey in the summer, but local authorities say the latest fires have covered a much bigger area.
notoriously volatile animals, as we all know. One moment, they are purring for your attention, and the next, they can't stand being touched. Now, a Canadian firm has come up with an app that can help you better understand your feline friends. The app is called Tabby and works with artificial intelligence. The AI's algorithm was trained at a clinic in the city of Calgary. The developers of Tabby hope their product can be useful for novice cat owners and vets alike. The app can also help monitor the health of cats. Tabby's developer explains how the app functions.
It uses artificial intelligence, so specifically machine learning, and it's coupled with the feline grimace scale. And what the feline grimace scale is, it's a way for humans to be able to determine if a cat is in pain or not based on the ear positioning, the eye positioning, the muzzle, whiskers, things like that. And so we were able to train a machine using machine learning and a series of images to be able to make that determination. So if you're somebody who has a cat but you don't have that training, you can just use the app and it can help you determine this, how your cat is doing.
Sounds very useful, but Tabby is not perfect though and runs into problems when trying to decipher the mood of black cats. Despite the hiccups, the developers say the program will get better at doing its task as its artificial intelligence develops through practice. Humans have damaged the environment, perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Known in Cyprus as Birdman, 28-year-old Konstantinos Antonio is a wildlife veterinarian. Every year, he saves hundreds of sick or wounded wild birds. The animals brought to him are usually found by regular people. Konstantinos says climate change has made the task of assisting birds more urgent as their survival becomes harder and harder. The Cypriot environmentalists usually freeze the animals after treatment in the presence of other people in order to raise awareness about the issue. A vertical forest has transformed the Chinese megacity of Chengdu into a concrete jungle, making the lives of the residents greener. Each unit at the 8-tower complex has a balcony with around 20 types of luxuriant plants and greenery. The green space filters air and noise pollution while creating a spectacular view. The project in the southwestern city was completed in 2018, and all of the 826 apartments were sold out at the time.
I think it's quite good. The air quality is pretty good and much better than my old houses. The air is good when you wake up in the morning, and the green trees are good for us elderly people. They are good for our eyes.
Besides all the benefits, the apartments have a major problem. They have been overrun by plants and invaded by mosquitoes. The issue has forced some of the occupants to move out. Other cities around the world, such as New York and Copenhagen, have also launched similar green housing projects.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The best visited multimedia exhibit in the world known as Van Gogh Live. The experience has opened in Munich after being postponed a number of times due to COVID-19.
Van Gogh is einfach der berühmteste.
Van Gogh is just the most famous artist in the world. He is also a prototype artist. He is the last artist who then tragically dies at the end. His life story was just fascinating, and that's why he is Van Gogh. And of course, his artworks are fascinating.
Featuring some of Van Gogh's best-known works, the exhibition is not only a feast for the eyes, but the senses, with music and smells to accompany the colorful projections. The exhibit is supposed to smell like the countryside because of where Van Gogh lived. However, the organizers say visitors cannot really experience the feeling due to wearing masks. Van Gogh Alive, the experience was first presented in Singapore in 2011. Since then, the multimedia exhibit has been seen in 70 cities and has attracted some 6 million visitors. Conservation measures have managed to bring the world's most endangered cat back from the brink of extinction. In 2002, there were less than 100 Iberian lynx left in the wild. The situation prompted officials in Spain and Portugal to save the animal through a captive breeding program. They also tried hard to fight poaching and reintroduce rabbits, the cat's major prey, into the wild. By the end of 2020, there were over 1,100 Iberian lynx living in the two countries, most of them in Spain's southern region of Andalusia.
The main cause of death for wildlife, certainly in the natural environment, is related to human activities, roadkill, poaching, unwanted encounters. So the less interaction they have with humans, the better.
Despite the successful measures, the International Union for Conservation of Nature still lists the animal as endangered. It's estimated that the species will be out of danger only when its population surpasses 3,000. Urban development, hunting, and roadkill are the major reasons of death for wild lynxes these days. Brazilians have come up with a creative idea to combat population, that is pollution and global warming, repopulating mangroves. The project is aimed at reforesting an area equal to 75 football fields in Guanabara Bay. Organizers hope to make the biggest mangrove garden in the country. Mangroves, which usually grow in tropical regions, are essential to maintaining water quality and clarity. They filter and trap sediments, heavy metals, and other pollutants. Mangrove forests are also able to store 3 to 4 times more carbon than other forests.
Nostalgia is in the air in Paris as the streets of the city are enlivened, that is, with old vehicles. The French capital has hosted an annual parade called Summer Crossing of Paris. It brought together over 700 vintage cars, motorbikes, buses, and tractors from all over Europe. The route started from a Vincennes castle east of Paris and ended in the southwest of the city. Drivers crossed the iconic monuments such as the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe.
It is extraordinary because the automobile industry heritage and the Parisian architectural heritage, which is obviously absolutely fabulous, echo each other. We are driving through all of Paris's most beautiful squares.
The 14th version of the event drew hundreds of enthusiastic visitors from across France. People were asked to wear masks and keep social distancing because of COVID-19. Tehran municipality has inaugurated an art garden that puts on display Iran's art and culture. As Youssef Jalali reports, the cultural facility aims to reconnect visitors with Iran's rich past amid increasing preoccupation with modern lives.
Sit back and enjoy the beauty of Iran's ancient culture. In Kushk Art Garden, located in the heart of Tehran, visitors get to learn about Iran's music, literature, painting and calligraphy, far from the hustle and bustle of modern life. Kushk hosts Iranian artists who create masterpieces that have their roots in thousands of years ago.
Miniature painting has been around in Iran since thousands of years ago. In miniature, we paint flat images with a myriad of details. We avoid adding shades to make it as flat as possible, since in the past, Iranians believed that divine light gives shape to everything.
Metal engraving first stepped into existence 7,000 years ago in Iran. It is the art of incising decorations and metals. In this workshop, I will be available every day for visitors to see how I can turn metals into beautiful handicraft.
Kushk is part of a bigger project dubbed Art Garden. The cultural complex consists of an art lake, poem and literature house, music house, and Kushk Garden, each trying to promote an aspect of Iran's culture. Tehran municipality says it inaugurated the peaceful place, for it says cultural identity has been overshadowed by modern technology.
This precious place was a much-needed initiative to preserve the Iranian art and culture. As time goes by, technology gets more and more intertwined with our daily lives, and our genuine culture slips into oblivion. We need to have such cultural centers that safeguard our cultural heritage.
The Art Garden is situated on Abbasabad Hills in downtown Tehran. In recent years, the area has turned into a tourist attraction that houses structures that combine modern technology with ancient culture, such as this large pedestrian overpass called Tabiat Bridge, and the Middle East's largest planetarium, dubbed Mina Dome.
Kushk will be the last piece of Tehran's art garden, and will be a hotspot for a range of cultural activities, all aiming to revive the ancient Iranian art and culture, which experts believe have become a lost piece in today's hectic life. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
An analysis by British academics published by the UK government's official scientific advisory group says that they believe it is almost certain that a SARS-CoV-2 variant will emerge that leads to current vaccine failure. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus that causes COVID-19. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Mick Krever, writer. This article is published under the heading, UK scientists believe it is almost certain a coronavirus variant will emerge that beats current vaccines. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. An analysis by British academics published by the UK government's official scientific advisory group says that they believe it is almost certain that a SARS-CoV-2 variant will emerge that leads to current vaccine failure. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus that causes COVID-19. The analysis has not been peer-reviewed. The early research is theoretical and does not provide any proof that such a